when we're recording the album in Siwolf Studios in Suomenlinna, Marco was engineer over there.
Ah, okay.
That's how we met Marco, and later on he started playing with us.
Well, which year was that basically when you went to record the album there?
98 maybe.
So why basically did you and when did you move to the States?
It's been 7.5 years. Well, after I lived in LA, I always wanted to go back.
Okay. You lived in LA first sometime?
Yeah, from 89 to 92. And okay. I went to GIT, Musicians Institute, study guitar.
Okay.
I played in a local band and all that. I came back for a little while, got a new visa. And then I have to come back. My visa expired.
Okay.
And also my student loan interest rate went from 6 to 20.
Okay.
And I paid it back for years. It pretty much ruined me financially for next 15 years.
All right.
The Helibor was supposed to be really steady and really reliable. The banker that I was doing the loan with, also Spunky, and we got this new thing called Helibor. It's really good. You can save a lot of money. End up losing about 400,000 marks for that.
Okay, so was this basically actually, did this somehow relate to that economic Finnish lama?
Yeah, it was 89,
depression.
The depression, before depression, when depression started and Soviet Union collapsed, interest rates went super high. And like mine went for 6 to 20 for years. And in 4 years, I paid more interest than my whole principal was on my loan.
Right.
And
did you need to basically take the loan to get to that? Was it MIT?
GIT.
GIT.
Guitar Institute of Technology, Musicians Institute that is in Hollywood.
Okay.
I always read about it in guitar magazines. I always wanted to go there.
Okay, that's why basically.
That's why I went there originally.
It had such a good like reputation.
Yeah, all the great guys went there, and there's always articles about it. How you practice all week, then you go to the beach a week and say, which I did. Okay. It was one of the greatest years ever.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but yeah, I had to take a loan. Personal loan, student loan wouldn't cover probably 20%.
Yeah.
And then when the interest rate went super high, I had a good paying plan to pay it back in 4 years. And without the interest rates going down like that, up like that, I had no problem to pay it back.
Yeah. So did you basically have some, like, you went there after, like, high school or?
Yeah, I went to high school, then I went to military. After military, 89, I was 22 when I went there.
And you've basically been, before that, been just playing like guitar on your own in some bands or something like
this. Yeah, in the local bands. And basically, I started taking lessons from Ilkka Rantamäki.
Okay.
Everybody took lessons from Ile, like late 80s. And Ile was already had only been in GIT for one semester. He was just like, just go, take a loan from bank and just go. Okay. I didn't know it's that simple.
So he basically recommended that.
Yeah, I always read about it, dreamed about it. But okay. He just made it sound so simple.
All right.
So I took student loans, student aid, and just left.
Yeah, right. So it's a bit different in the stage. The school actually costs quite a lot of money. Than in Finland, we have this like a free education.
But think about the schools in America. You have so many choices. Like here for medical school, what they take, like a law school, 50 people in a year. You get so many different levels of educations there, even though there's affordable ones too. So you don't have to go to Harvard Law School or something.
Yeah,
just be a lawyer.
Of course.
But it's already more expensive.
Right. So were there also other like Finnish, basically, students at the GIT?
Yeah, I was lucky. Sami Kuoppamäki was there, and Peter Enberg, which is one of the most talented jazz guitar players in the world.
All right. Okay.
But it's like those guys were, and just I was still a beginner.
All right.
But I was lucky enough to play with them, and before the school started, Peter gave me this sheet. He wrote it down by hand. He was like 18 at the time. Pretty much the whole sheet was the whole GIT, and it's like a small print. I didn't understand at the time, but he knew everything already before he went there. He was student of the year and everything.
Ah, okay.
And it's, of course, Kuoppis was super good already.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of Finns there.
Yeah. So basically, that was beginning of 90s.
That was 89 to 90.
Yeah. How has basically the It was in Hollywood.
Hollywood.
In Los Angeles, in the area. How have you been like recently in the Los Angeles? How has it changed basically?
It's horrible nowadays. Okay. First of all, it's so expensive. I don't know how anybody can live there.
Yeah.
A lot of people are moving from California either to Texas or Florida. It's losing a lot of businesses too. Like Tesla left California and moved to Texas.
Right.
And it's just so many homeless people because they can't afford rent. My daughter lives in San Diego. And only reason she can live there because she was in the Navy.
Okay.
U.S. Navy, and they pay for her rent and everything.
Right.
But I think there's some kind of comparison that you do in online. I think it's like 63% more expensive to live in Los Angeles than like where I'm living right now.
Yeah, right. It's a kind of like a little bit, not, I don't know, is it exactly the same, but like, for example, here in Helsinki area, the housings are completely different, rates than in like a middle of Finland. Or.
Yeah, it's even more, but the differences are so big because I live in a different state. Like in Texas, we don't have an estate tax.
Right.
In California, estate tax and city tax and gas is twice as much as in Texas. And like my daughter, when she was driving from San Diego to Texas, she was just waiting to pass the state line because the gas was like $2 less a gallon.
Right.
When she passed the different state.
Yeah.
Next state, so. I could never afford to live there. I would live in a tent and, you know,
use like many of the people do live there.
Yeah, drive a bicycle, live in a tent. So, yeah, hell no. I went there when I turned 50 for a couple of weeks, and it was fun to go, but I would never live there.
Yeah. Let's put the mic a bit like closer, maybe.
Yeah. And GIT, the whole school at the Japanese bottom, like late 90s, it changed a little bit, not for the better. And now it used to be 1 year, now it's 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's more like a regular school. It was more like rock school at the time, which I loved. Not like Berkeley.
Yeah.
More like free, open kind of thing. So.
All right.
And like when you had most schools, you have to do this English test.
Yeah.
You have to pass. But for that, they said music is international language. Yeah. So, you know, there was a bunch of people didn't speak almost any English.
Right.
I don't know how they survived.
Yeah, that's good. So basically now you live in Texas.
Yeah.
What's the place?
I live in Willis, which is like an hour north from Houston.
Okay.
I work in Houston. I drive 1 hour one way every day.
Okay. So you're doing some kind of, what I understand.
I'm doing private, private security, watching over wealthy people.
All right.
I was working in a prison for 3 years and it's a nice change.
Yeah. I guess so. Is there basically any kind of rock or metal scene in the place where
there's a small metal scene. The country is, of course, big thing.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, you always see some long-haired guys over there.
Some random.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not that big. But there is, and I played in a band a little bit, but that just didn't work out.
Yeah.
And this more too much 80s hair kind of thing that I passed it already.
Yeah, it seemed like I also visited States 2 years ago, and I know 10 years earlier in the eastern coast, but it was like pretty difficult, for example, to find metal bars in New York, or in like for example Pittsburgh or Washington, where we also visited. For basically Helsinki, with numerous metal rock bars. Okay, now they are also a little bit declining, I think, but it's a bit non-existing, at least in the bar. Level,
bar scene,
the metal thing, but I guess there are gigs though.
Yeah, yeah. When I went to Dallas to see what's the Opeth and a couple other bands, and there's a lot of people.
Yeah, so basically, those are then I guess those metal kind of bar evenings.
Yeah, events like that. Yeah, there's a lot of people. Then I went to see. I always wanted to see Deep Purple. I have to go all the way to Texas to finally see them live.
Okay,
but Deep Purple is mostly old people like me.
Yeah.
But generally, there's still a pretty good metal scene, but it's more modern kind of what probably stuff you play more than I used to play.
Yeah.
I'm still old school. For me, new band is Dream Theater is new band for me.
Yeah.
When they started '89 or something.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So.
Has there been any basically new metal bands which have inspired you or which you have been digging since Dream Theater came out?
Symphony X, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit of same.
I didn't even know a lot of new bands. I listen to a lot of stuff, and sometimes there's something that I like.
Yeah.
But Not like my wife listens to more modern stuff, and I hear it all the time.
I think I need to hook you up with some.
Yeah, definitely. I'm kind of mostly because I like old kind of like classic metal singing.
Yeah.
Kind of high pitch, you know. And the most stuff nowadays, it's not that really.
Well, yeah, but then again, of course, you need to basically be listening a lot of music and like be into. But I think there are, but a little bit into like a decreasing amount of new good bands which inspire at least, for example, me as well.
Yeah, but a good song is a good song. Sometimes there's excellent playing a lot of times, but I like something that surprises me.
Yeah,
like great harmony. It's not always the same three chords. It's boring as hell.
Yeah,
sometimes they work, but they've been played already so many times.
Right, right. So now you're basically visiting Finland in a long, like it's been a long break since you've been here.
Ever since we moved there 7.5 years, we came finally.
Right.
Came here and it was supposed, looked like a long time. We're here like 5-10 days. It's been going so fast.
Yeah.
Every day is so busy.
Yeah.
Can hardly have time to sleep.
tough holiday.
I still don't have time to see everybody. It's really, it's too bad. But just next time it's gotta come for two weeks or more.
Yeah.
The next 70 years.
Right, right. Yeah,
I need a vacation from vacation.
Exactly. That happens quite often.
Yeah.
I try not to make that kind of a situation, but it's not always, of course, possible. And for me, example, this is now a holiday, actual holiday for maybe 3 weeks of real holiday since like a couple of years.
So, really?
Yeah.
Kind of for me, I was always self-employed most of the time. So when I finally started working for corrections here in prison, I got my first paid vacation, first time after 87. And then to like 2012, it's like, somebody's paying for me.
Yeah.
I'm on vacation.
That is a vacation.
That's really vacation.
Yeah. Right. So basically, you went to the GIT and then spent there 3 years or something like this.
Altogether,
And then you came back to Finland. What basically then happened like in the like music ventures?
I played this little band with Freno. I don't know, my brother introduced me for a couple of players.
Okay.
And I played in a band called Shake a Beer.
Okay.
It was, you know, I just started, they were good, nice guys. We did a lot of different stuff. We did some really, also like a Finnish pop kind of project, which never came out, unfortunately. It's pretty fun. And then I met Peter James Goodman, Pete.
Yeah.
And we played with a band called Room 7. We played in Elämä Lapselle concert in stadium there, and after that I started gigging with Peter, all kind of, you know, duo gigs, the whole band.
Right.
And after a while, we ended up doing the album with the Conquest.
Yeah. So how basically did you form then the Conquest
band? That's me and Peter always.
Okay.
And then we talked Tuomo Lassali into it. He already quit playing drums. He was just playing classical percussions, and we just kind of, you're gonna play with us, okay? And he was kind of like, he was mad because everything that used to be so easy for him wasn't that easy anymore. After, I think he didn't play for 2 years or something. But he got back around to it, and we started the album we made. We had Jukka Kolmanen playing for bass, which is a great bass player. He lives in Kuopio. But after when we were recording the album in Seawolf Studios in Suomenlinna, Marco was the engineer over there.
Oh, okay.
That's how we met Marco. And later on, he started playing with us.
Yeah. Well, which year was that, basically, when you went to record the album there?
98, maybe.
Yeah. And then the album came something like 99.
Right? I think it was 99.
Yeah. And then you did some gigs like around Finland, some clubs.
We played a lot. I think, including all the duo gigs, I played like 100 plus gigs for years.
Okay.
I did a lot of duo gigs with Peter.
Yeah. But with Conquest then?
Yeah, we played a lot of gigs with the full band too.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
And with the, like, did you have actual only like Conquest gigs or also, or were they always basically Conquest plays Metal Gods?
It was always Conquest plays Metal Gods. Okay. There was enough material for it anyway, like just the album.
Right.
So we played not all the songs from the album and then a bunch of covers.
Yeah. They were great gigs. I was also like attending
It was fun. It's a great band.
Yeah.
We had so amazing players. And Pate on keyboards, he's amazing. He plays in Popeda right now.
Yeah.
He's an amazing player.
Yeah.
So It couldn't go wrong, really.
Yeah, yeah. Those were legendary, those ceiling passer gigs.
Yeah, so...
You played a lot of gigs in that place.
We played a lot of gigs. Sometimes somebody went to the gig and somebody canceled, like, we don't have a written contract, so go away. So we called the owner and he was like, just come here, I pay you. Okay, I'll give you a pizza.
Yeah, yeah.
We played there so many times.
Yeah.
Sometimes the thing, we just went there for the pizza.
Right.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And sometimes people ask me, why you don't sing? Like, I have a Pete and Marco on my band. I'm going to sing. Are you crazy?
Okay, but you have some kind of like a background in singing, or why were they asking that thing?
Well, when I was a kid, I was singing in a church choir. Before my voice changed, I actually had a great voice. I was singing soprano in cantores minores, but no, I ain't singing anymore. I sound like shit. Yeah. I know that. And I played, sometimes sang maybe like like Purple Haze or something.
Yeah.
Anybody can sing Hendrix, but
yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I definitely... I tried singing, and I tried when I know it sounds like crap.
Yeah.
So it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Right. So basically, if you're thinking about the like inspirations for the music, at least in our talks, Dream Theater has often come up. But like, is that basically the biggest one, or are there then also
there's other a lot of ones? I think Dream Theater was more like when all the crunch crap came, I hated crunch. 90s was horrible. Dream Theater was like a promise in the middle of all the bullshit that there's still people doing music.
Right.
But I started listening to Queen, Van Halen. Frank Marino is one of my biggest influences
right. As
a guitar player. I was huge with Van Halen. I tried to play that stuff for years and years. Then Yngwie came. I went completely crazy. I practiced Yngwie for years, and actually I was able to play a lot of this stuff. But nowadays, it's kind of strange to me. I have some stuff that comes without even knowing. I played so many times. When it's harmonic minor time, Yngwie comes out without even thinking about
it. Right.
But he was so different when he came. Nobody played like that. And I always wanted to learn how to play scales in a rock context. Nobody else really did it. So I loved it. Too bad he's not that great anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, at least for me, the latest really good Yngwie album was the Facing the Animal.
I agree, actually, absolutely. That's
really good album.
The last one I liked.
Yeah.
I think Seven Sun was still great. I went to see them in Helsinki.
But wasn't that before?
That was before, yeah. Right. Then Facing the Animal was like a last promise. They still had a... But nowadays, I'm not saying that musicians are bad, but they're not well known, so he can just be the dictator and tell everybody what to do, and it's not a good idea.
Yeah, and he has basically somehow, I think... I don't know where there are the producers in the earlier like good Yngwie albums.
They were, and Odyssey was completely produced by somebody else. I liked Odyssey. It was more commercial, but I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. So I guess it's a little bit similar kind of a thing, which I think, at least to me, which happened a bit with Dream Theater. They ditched the producers and started producing themselves, and then they could, because they know what to do and they can do whatever they want to, and then it kind of sounds a bit like that sometimes.
I think there needs to be somebody saying, outside saying, no, this sounds like shit. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Like with Yngwie.
Especially, I think, sorry for interrupting, but especially I think in these like super technical, super players like Yngwie and Dream Theater, somebody needs to be saying, hey, hold on a little
bit. And Yngwie should never sing. He's not the most horrible singer, but he used to have great singers.
But
Yngwie is cheap. He's not making the money he used to. So that's why keyboard player or bass player is singing, because he don't want to pay extra person.
Right.
I saw his live from Houston like 2 years ago, and that time he sounded super bad. But now last live I saw on YouTube from Las Vegas, I think it was pretty decent. They had vocal harmonies. He didn't play by himself for like half an hour, and because that's boring for everybody. Even me, when I was even big Yngwie fan, when he played for 30 minutes, enough.
Yeah.
Play some songs, please.
Yeah, it was horrible, like when they played in Kulttuuritalo. Yngwie, I don't know which year it was, but there was also Derek Sherinian on the keyboards.
Yeah.
And half of the show was stolen exactly by Yngwie doing his guitar wanking, and like I left early the gig because it just didn't.
Yeah, that tells a lot.
Come to an end.
But when he played the Seven Sign Tour, he played in Atavastia, and there was mostly just complete whole songs. He didn't stop in the middle of the song and solo for 15 minutes. They were good songs, great band, great singer.
Right.
It was a great gig.
Yeah. Like, if you have great songs, fucking play them.
yeah, it's just like, Yeah, you're a good player. But also I think nowadays he just plays the same all the time. If you don't play any harmonic minor for a whole song, I'm happy. Yeah. Like it actually happened twice, one of the new songs. I didn't like the songs even that much. I was so happy he didn't go for that, like that comes from his just from his backbone. Every time you have to go the harmonic minor and just to play the same licks all over again, it's been done. It's fine. You can do it. Don't do it anymore.
Right.
I'm always hoping he would open up for new sound shapes, kind of like Mixolydian and Dorian, kind of like open up because he's super talented.
Yeah.
He could do so much more.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Or he could just write again good songs and but proper.
Then he needs to have a great singer who's going to be doing the songs with him. And like when Joel and Turner was there, he wrote a lot of those melodies. Even Ingvar saying he wrote everything, but it's not true. You can hear from the melodies that Joel and Turner did a lot of melodies, and they sound different.
Yeah,
there needs to be somebody like a compressor limiting your crap that you can do, because if you're a dictator, nobody's telling you that's not a good idea.
Yeah. But I have to say, like one which was surprising to me, but I think for that kind of a Hendrix style of a singing, like that While My Guitar Gently Sweeps, is the Beatles cover by Yngwie. At least I like that one. Yeah, that was the best one I've heard from Yngwie.
Yeah, that album also.
Okay, it wasn't his own song though. But,
It was actually, even his singing kind of suited for that.
Yeah, for me as well. Like I like that song. That's a great song. I
also like Vinnie Moore's version of it. I don't know if you heard it.
Okay, I haven't. I think
it's from his, third or second solo album. It's just all instrumental, but he plays amazingly.
Right.
Vinnie Moore is a huge influence for me.
Okay.
I've been following him and tried to play his stuff for years. I had a lot of students for over years, a couple hundred students, and they all played Vinnie Moore, they all played Yngwie. And I just came back from GIT. I tried to make everybody the best guitar player in the world, and they just wanted to learn how to play Christmas songs or something. And I made them improvise over Christmas songs, like chord progressions. Like, I just want to learn how to strum this. So it took me a while to understand. Some people don't want to be improvising over those chords. They just want to learn the basic things.
Right. So you were doing basically those guitar lessons when you came back.
Yeah, I had a lot of students. I was teaching in one music school once a week, and I have like 30 to 40 students a week at home.
Okay, all right. So that basically provided also some decent income in a way.
Yeah, it was like okay, but then you have a Christmas break and Heath Aloma and summer break, and those months I was struggling.
Yeah, right.
And also Peter wanted to take one month off the year. I couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
And then I was, I was in minus for a couple months, and then was trying to gain back to getting back to even to pay my bills.
Yeah, right.
It's hard to be a musician.
Yeah, it can be.
Yeah.
Or like doing basically freelance, any kind of job, at least till some point, until maybe at some point that basically the bank explodes and somehow you start getting a lot of gigs.
It's kind of because you never know how much you're going to make.
Yeah, that's true.
And then it's going to be go a week, go in school or something, and nobody comes. And I think I'm going to get 300 something in 1 week, paying a bill, then I'm not getting anything. So next week, I'm going to be a week behind on everything.
Yeah.
So, but I still loved it. I burn out a little bit teaching so much.
Okay.
So later on, I only have like advanced students that came once in a while. I gave them something for a whole month. They came back. And then I have a couple of students like Mikko Kosonen, and he just technically could play anything. I mean anything. Okay. I gave him Erotomania, there's a quintuplet thing in the middle, which is super fast, super. He came back in a week and played with metronome. I was like, motherfucker, I can't even play myself yet.
Okay.
And he went to Berklee School of Music.
Okay.
He actually earned a scholarship for that. And he's super talented. And there's nothing in this world he can't play.
All right.
There's some people that just technically are so great.
Yeah. And I remember also, like, you were with Conquest, you played also some show in Jyrki TV show, the legendary.
Well, it's when the album came out, when he did a live show and interview. And that's actually pretty good. I'm pretty proud of that. Everything went well. And it was all live, so you can't make your mistakes. I wasn't even worried about my playing so much that, I'm gonna break a string or something stupid is gonna happen.
Of course.
When everything went well, it was pretty good.
Yeah. I think Jyrki was a really great platform for like new bands, especially in that time. I would think that also Finnish metal scene like basically owes a little bit to that show.
Yeah, it's a really great way
to promote your band and like kind of bring metal to Finnish.
Kind of Finnish MTV kind of idea. Yeah. It worked fine for a while. But then we had a record deal with the English record company, and we had a distribution deal with what's the biggest record company in Finland for metal? What the hell is it called?
Depends, I guess. I guess back in the day it was Spine Farm.
Yes, it was Spine Farm. I already there was ad out for our album ad out, you know, sound and everything, and they start arguing with the British record company. They end up sending all the albums back to England, so we advertising for an album you can't buy.
Okay.
Then we have to make a private deal with the private distributor. We finally got the album out, but it's months later.
Yeah.
So that kind of went sideways big time.
Okay. Yeah. That's always nice.
And also, you know, they still owe us, I think, $5,000. We got a Japanese deal, like extra deal for Japan. The owner called me all the time, you know, I need to sign this, get $5,000 for that. After that, I couldn't reach him. We never got the $5,000. The album was out in Japan, but
yeah,
they never paid us any money.
Okay, nice. Very nice.
Yeah, I was kind of annoyed because I know they were like not big company, but I was watching over there. They're making good. They did like mid-sized record company, a lot of artists. It's not like they didn't have money.
Yeah.
And they never paid us that.
Yeah. Bastards.
Yeah, motherfuckers. Always felt like I want to take like an Ilta Sanomat trip. I'm going to go and just, you know, take the money from the guy. They're going to videotape me, you know, strangling that guy and taking money personally. I was so mad at that. Probably wouldn't be best advertisement. But I was so pissed. And it just, because they had the money. We did everything right, and they just one time they said we can pay you with your own albums. Like, hell no, give me money.
Yeah,
I don't need any more albums.
Right,
never happened.
Yeah. So what about basically the teaching which you did? Have you been giving also lessons in the States, or what's the basically the deal with that now?
I've been so busy working.
Okay,
I've been thinking about it, and people be asking about it, but I've been working so much. I work pretty much 60-70 hours a week.
Okay, and that's quite a lot.
Yeah, I just when I have time off, I just don't feel like doing anything extra.
Right, right.
Before I was working for prison, I was super exhausting, and I was working a bit more.
Yeah,
I was working 4 days off, 4 days on, and when I was off, I didn't want to do anything.
Yeah, right, right.
Working out, that's it.
Okay,
I always practice all the time, but playing for my dogs is not the same thing.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. But they're my audience.
Right.
The whole like new scene. Music business has changed so much. Like, this is the new music business. Anything online, YouTube.
Yeah.
I don't know how people make money anymore.
They don't.
There's no album sales. Streaming don't pay you anything, pretty much.
Yeah. But I guess, though, now depends. You need to have a big audience. But at least the Twitch streams, which I don't actually even know myself even much about, but I think they have somewhat of a kind of a... I don't know what's the basic monetization, even with smaller audiences, that you are able to get quicker some kind of income with the streams. Whereas in YouTube, you need to basically reach a certain amount of bigger audience. Of course, I guess there are limits in the Twitch as well, but in YouTube, at least then those who manage to get a big following, then it's possible to get a proper income as well. From YouTube, just doing YouTube, but of course it's a bit different kind of a thing than playing gigs and
People used to make money from albums.
Yeah,
and I liked when you have physical album. Like,
yeah,
I hate downloading stuff, and I like LPs. Like,
yeah,
all the cover art and everything. It was so different.
Yeah,
but
it's a different experience, kind of.
I need to buy all LP player and just start buying LPs again.
Yeah.
I unfortunately had to sell everything when we moved. So all my CDs, all my LPs. But I didn't want to sell all my guitar magazines. I started subscribing Guitar Player 83. And all the guitar players, everything. And I didn't want to sell them, but it's too expensive. So
yeah,
I had to get. I saved a couple extra copies that I really liked, but extra ones. But it was heartbreaking.
Yeah. Do you basically use Spotify or this kind of like in order to listen music?
It's YouTube. I don't even have a Spotify.
Okay.
I do actually, but I never open up an account.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about it for 6 years now. Never. Only when people put stuff out like songs, you don't want to listen, put it out there, like in Facebook, Spotify opens it.
Yeah.
And I don't have a Spotify.
Yeah.
Well, I do, but you know.
Yeah.
Maybe one day actually get around to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's only mostly YouTube.
Yeah.
I kind of don't like YouTube because I don't know how the copyright stuff works on YouTube because people just, it don't really.
I think like YouTube, at least my understanding, I'm an expert on that, but you're able, basically, at least you can also see in the video descriptions, it will read the credits and it will basically then play, pay royalties to the actual like creator of the music, and you are not able to monetize, of course, like your channel for posting other people's copyrighted music. So at least to some extent it does work. Or I guess it works as it should be, but I guess the income is not too big.
But like if somebody would put our stuff out, this, you know, I'm sure I'm getting no money. Not like a lot of people listen to it, but I think you have some kind of deal with the YouTube. They know even who to pay for. And I know who Rick Beato is.
Sorry?
Rick Beato. I follow him. He's got like 2.5 million followers. He's a music producer.
Okay.
Started doing whole YouTube channel 5 years ago. He's super cool. I listen to him all the time. He makes this series, What Makes This Song Great? And even though he's putting this half an hour long video about how this song is so great, and they still want the video out, the original, even though he's like making new kids understand new songs they never heard in their life, and appreciate them and listen to them, and still a lot of bands just want him to take the video out.
Yeah.
At least he's demonetized for all time.
Yeah.
He's always kind of frustrated, like I'm telling you, song is great for people never heard about before. They're gonna listen to it, and you want to get rid of my video.
Yeah.
But he also analyzes stuff. What I love, I like to analyze songs and you know, chord progressions and stuff. My wife goes crazy when I do it when we listen to music, and he goes to all extent to analyze the chord progressions and intervals and shit. And it's so fun to listen to me. Yeah.
Is he that gray haired guy?
Yeah.
Right.
He's a cool guy.
Right. So that's basically one of the channels which you are following.
I follow him all the time.
Okay.
And he analyzes all kind of, because I like the analysis of chord harmonies, and when people are using maybe more advanced chords and harmonies that just regular, I love that.
Yeah.
I always try to do something if I do a song, at least there's a one part which is going to be like, what? In a good way. Yeah. Not so, what the hell happened? But so because stuff is so like, I always know what's next.
Yeah.
So so the predictable, so it's boring.
Yeah, right.
With Yngwie, it's like always waiting for that moment, like, really? But it's like, I know what's going next. Yeah. I know what's going next. I know what's coming next.
Yeah.
It's boring.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why I like 3 in theater too. A lot of that chord progressions, to keep evolving and evolving and moving and moving, and chord changes and stuff and modulations. That is a lot of fun for my ear.
Yeah. Yeah,
but some people like sounds strange.
Yeah, at least I don't know. But now, since after Portnoy left the band, some ingredient to me is quite a bit missing in the in the Dream Theater these days.
I listen to new albums, but I don't kind of get a grasp about them same way I did before.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm getting older too.
Or but maybe.
But the old albums, some of them are. I still listen mostly to, I don't know, old albums, but like 90s, late 90s albums more.
Right.
And Images of Warsaw, of course.
Yeah.
When I'm super tired driving home, I put it on, I'm fine.
Yeah.
It's always great.
Yeah, right.
I played that so many times. All the songs, all the solos, everything. I don't remember how to play it anymore. Some of the stuff is super difficult. I loved it. It's great practice too.
Yeah. Right. So basically, now then, after your holiday ends, you're going back to States.
Back home.
Usual.
Back to working. And I travel guitar.
Yeah, okay.
I got my mini travel guitar. I play in my truck a lot of times doing extra jobs. And that pretty much keeps my chops up right now.
Right.
I just 4 hours I practice techniques and shit. There's nothing else to do. And it actually helped me a lot.
Yeah.
Stuff that I kind of tried to practice for years, kind of helped me getting that through, because Nowadays, if I play, I just jam. I put backing track, I jam. Yeah. I don't really practice, yeah. Which would be good, but.
Yeah, but what's basically the point, unless you have some kind of a thing you need to prepare for.
Exactly, I got a gig coming up or something, yeah. I need to practice these songs. That's different, then you actually have motivation to do it. Otherwise, yeah. It's like, if something that I don't need, why practice it?
Yeah, right.
But hopefully, you know, at least we're going to do our stuff, which is kind of helpful. It makes me push myself.
Yeah.
Actually get something, do one whole thing. Like, I'm kind of, when I practice stuff, I take a little part of this song. I'm really, really bad about practicing the whole thing.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
It's going to make me actually practice the whole song and actually do one totality of something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually like, for me as well, when I basically launched the YouTube channel, one of those reasons why I launched it was to basically kick myself in the butt, to basically force myself to go to practice and like basically look deep into the, for example, how to produce sound or tuning or technique and yeah. things like this. And basically through that, basically found a way or a reason why I would be practicing. Because there's something, if I'm recording something and I'm putting it out for people to listen, so there's something, there's some kind of goal in it rather than basically how it used to be. Basically, we were doing like albums with my band, but that was basically that. And it might sometimes take a lot of years between the albums, several years. and now basically to push myself more during even that kind of like downtime to focus on technique and by putting like stuff out.
Yeah, otherwise it's gonna be just kind of noodling.
Yeah,
just doing something.
Yeah,
I'm gonna launch my YouTube channel when I finally, hopefully, when we're done with the song.
And which song?
Talking about that, the Steve Vai, Tender Surrender, which is, it's not the difficult song. When what people are comparing to you to Steve Vai, you start thinking about differently, like. You have to make it sound good and different.
Yeah, there's certain standard kind of like.
Yeah, I don't want to be like, okay, this sounds like crap.
Yeah,
and it's kind of, that pushes me a lot. And but now I'm not satisfied with anything.
Yeah.
And also the struggle with the recording, which been kind of, like, you know, pain in the ass.
So basically, you haven't been like, I don't know, like the people who might be watching this is like that. We have this project to make like a kind of a cover of the Steve Vai's Tender Surrender song, and like and to also like record it, you would be recording it likely in the States, and me here in Finland in this modern new way, and also release it at some point. So basically, before this, you have never been basically recording with computer as
well. No, not at all. I'm last time I think I used the Tascam Porter Studio for like C cassette. So
yeah.
So I'm completely out with this, but I don't know, stuff that I probably not been having sometimes makes no sense, even though it's probably, it's not me, of course, but it's been a struggle to get used to that digital recording. At least when you have the actual recording studio, everything is right there, but you know, when it's on computer, it's too many options to, too many places you can mess it up.
Yeah, certain things need to be basically covered. Yeah. You need to basically take time to sit down and understand the basics. But once, I think, once you get them laid down, then it starts to be more enjoyable experience. Yeah. But
I need to buy the speakers too, because my speakers are full of crap right now.
Right.
So that's one thing. And I need to buy better earphones and a lot of stuff that needs to be done. At least I can record now.
Yeah, you got into that point now that I would press record and actually get something.
Because I was getting so frustrated. I was losing my mind with that. But it's getting there.
Yeah.
I really want to get it really well. And when we're ready with that, I'm going to launch my YouTube channel. There's going to be instructional videos and stuff there.
Okay,
That I want to kind of like stuff that I really like.
Yeah, so basically, like as you have the background in the teaching, to maybe also start posting some teachings or like lessons on YouTube.
It's kind of losing arpeggios and sub arpeggios, kind of stuff that I like.
Yeah,
I think it sounds a little bit different than basically linear stuff that people are doing.
Yeah,
it will open up a little bit.
Yeah,
playing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I bet it's gonna be interesting once you get there.
I already planned couple lessons out, but before I want to get this Steve Vai song done and open up with that, before I do anything else.
Fuck, I'm scared. We have now said it out loud. That's the thing we might be putting out. That's a dangerous thing to do.
That's the only way probably get anything done.
Yeah,
like a lot of times when you book a kick, even before you practice that stuff, then you actually practice it. It makes you do it.
Yeah.
A lot of times, oh, you book a time for recording, and it's time to start practicing.
Yeah.
It pushes you to do it.
Yeah, it really makes you have to do it, especially if you say it out loud.
Yeah, and I have some really like advanced stuff I want to do it with steel. I don't know if they're going to even work. But I'm going to try them.
Yeah.
Some little chassis stuff. And I only know how they're going to sound out when I record it. In my head, it sounds good, but it might completely not fit it at all.
Yeah, we will see then how it's going to be eventually.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
That's why it's also...
Yeah.
It's demanding because he plays so well.
Yeah. It's kind of also like with drums, it's kind of like a simple, but then you need to still nail it. Nothing is basically simple if you want to basically nail it.
And you have to put your own sound and own thing to it. Yeah. Because you don't want to play the same, but the original drummer plays. That makes no sense.
Yeah, right.
I definitely don't want to play what Steve played.
Yeah.
I may steal a couple of things from him.
Yeah,
just accidentally put it there, but...
Yeah, to basically recognize that this song.
Yeah, and of course the theme is going to be about the same. Yeah. I'm going to alter a little bit, of course, but it has to sound like the same song still.
Yeah, but it definitely is not easy, like, to... Also then, as we are planning to have it on video as well, you need to have that and then also a lot of moving things, especially for you, since you haven't been doing much of anything with computer and like filming. So
yeah, it's challenging, trust me. It's like senior citizen trying to learn work computer.
It doesn't happen just like that, especially if you want to then also nail it. But let's hope it's worth the effort.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I want to make a good video. I want to make it sound good or look good. Otherwise, it makes no sense.
Yeah. All right. So let's see. Today also, we are planning to make a little jam.
Yeah.
Like here. Let's see what comes out of that as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm almost improvising. I really don't plan anything out.
Yeah.
Now with Steve, so we're actually going to have to plan a little bit.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to take too long.
Right.
But like even for the solos and Conquest, there's only one solo that's actually planned out. Everything else, I'm just noodling around. I hope something comes out. Something happens.
Yeah.
Some does not.
Yeah, there's different methods for sure to get things done. But it doesn't matter what is the method as long as it works.
But I don't like it too planned. Like, I was kind of disappointed when I saw Marty Friedman with the Megadeth. And he played everything note to note exactly the same way. I was hoping he would improvise a little bit.
You mean like Marty playing earlier Megadeth stuff, or he's like...
No. Album. I mean, I saw them like 100 years ago with the...
With Poland.
It's when Marty was playing still. I saw them with...
With his band, the other.
No, I saw them with Megadeth. And that's a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
But I knew all the solos. I was hoping he would alter, change them a little bit, improvise a little thing. Everything came from note to note, exactly the same as the album. It's boring to me.
You mean like the earlier Megadeth stuff?
Yeah, yeah. When, like Hangar 18 and that stuff.
So basically stuff he played on the album, but you would have liked that on live he would play
the... Yeah, a little bit differently. Okay. Improvise a little bit, alter a little bit.
Okay.
For me, it's boring if it's note to note exactly the same as an album.
Yeah. It's a tough one, though, then when you have these certain like highlight solos or highlight drum fills even. Like, sure, some kind of like a variation can be there, but then...
You can change... No, I don't like to change it too much.
Yeah.
But a little bit of something extra for the live.
Right.
But I like Marty. He's a great player.
Yeah.
He's super original. Yeah. Where he holds the pick like this, looks like he's just got some kind of injury in his hand. But he plays excellent. He was actually teaching in GIT.
Yeah.
That was before Megadeth.
Right.
And they quit his lessons because nobody came.
Why?
He was so weird. He's a great guy, but he's a strange guy. The way he was teaching was super weird.
So he was there at the same time when you were.
He was as a kind of celebrity teacher. He came a couple times a week. Gave his like extra lessons, like 15, 20 people. So he was showing stuff. But everyone wanted to see this fast cacophony, whatever stuff he did before. But he put the clean sound out. He played all this. Now would be interesting, but those times people just wanted, show me the fast sweep or something.
Okay.
And he didn't want to play that stuff. He wanted, it's more philosophical stuff, more improvising and changing from minor to major between the solo and stuff. Guys like, where's all the fast stuff? Yeah. No, people weren't ready for that.
But was this was basically before he joined Megadeth.
Yeah, that's before Megadeth.
Yeah.
After Megadeth, he was probably too busy. But
yeah, right.
I'm sure it would be full of every day after that.
Yeah.
He was a great player still at the time, but he's original.
Yeah.
For sure. I went to see him. I loved him.
But you didn't join his lessons.
Yeah. I went there a couple of times.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had a chance to play with Paul Gilbert once. That was great.
Okay. So he was as well, like, was he a student or then as a, like...
Yeah, he was student original. Then he came to play there all the time. Then there was like a raffle. You can win a chance to play 30 minutes with Paul Gilbert.
Okay.
So I went to play with him. But still, he sounded like a bunch of other... He was great and technically excellent and a fun guy. But he didn't sound really any different from all the students over there. Okay. He's really, really, really talented and really, really fast.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun, but it's like, it's kind of like jamming out the other guys.
Yeah.
He wasn't, okay. I don't know. But it was great.
Yeah.
And I recorded it, but I lost it. Too bad.
Oh, okay.
I was jamming with him, so I wanted to.
Okay.
Too bad it's gone somewhere. It's somewhere in my C cassettes.
Okay. Right. Cool. And then you also did, in the 90s, you did this, was it Rainbow tribute thing in Tavastia?
Yeah, yeah. The first Rainbow Purple tribute. The first one was excellent. We were the first band to start. It was sold out Tavastia. Start with Highway Star. You can't go wrong.
Yeah.
That was so much fun.
So did you say it was the first of those? Were there multiple of those gigs?
There was two. I played in two of them. Okay. Several after that. I played in the first two ones.
Okay.
But the first one was magic, kind of. It was first time we ever did it. It was Tavastia completely sold out. It was a great feeling. We had a great band.
Yeah. It was also like there were at least, was Tolki also playing one of the
Dimpo
players?
Was in the second one, I think, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
And first one, there's Marco was there. Or was the second one? It's a long time ago. There's a bunch of videos from that. I think the first one, Marco was in the first one too. I played Speed King with him and a couple other songs.
Right.
And also we played with the Room 7 at the Olympia Stadium.
So Room 7 was the first band with...
Peter, Pete, and at the time I was playing with a guy, a good friend of mine, and also, what's his name, the drummer, well, it's CMX later on for years. I'm getting old, I can't remember those names anymore. He was a great drummer, Tuomas Peippo. He just came from the Musicians Institute, from Drum Institute, and he was in like an overload. He was in great condition. He'd been practicing for a whole year, everything, and he wanted to put everything out. He never really played heavy metal in his life, but he was super good.
Okay.
It was a great gig.
So what was this? Where was this Elämä lapselle
concert? It was at Helsingin Olympia Stadium.
Some charity concert.
Yeah, the first of those charity concerts ever made.
Okay.
And
so what were you playing there basically then?
Hmm?
What were you playing there? Some other people's music, like other bands' music.
No, we played our own originals.
Ah, okay.
Only originals, which is kind of
okay. Interesting Elämä lapselle.
Yeah. And it was like progressive, kind of like print errors, kind of like heavy metal.
Right.
But I lost that tape too. I know some people still have the video. I'd love to have it.
Yeah.
Would be good promotional stuff too. But
right. How did that Rainbow tribute basically, who basically organized that?
I think it was Samuel Jylhä.
Right.
Sami was helping us a lot. He was actually one that found us for the record deal to England and everything.
Okay. Yeah.
And he actually, I got to know him. He was selling bootleg videos from concerts. I wanted to get Frank Marino video so bad. I was finally able to find some from him.
Yeah.
And he became a really good friend.
Yeah. Someone's also like, I also got to know him and we also like friends, and like he definitely had like a lot of archival, like brilliant like video stuff.
Yeah,
some of them were actually in this closet of mine, and some of them also ended up in the Tarot's DVD on the second, like the extra DVD, the Numerok stuff.
And he had stuff nobody else had, like roller skates. I don't know where he got them. And he's a great guy. He helped us a lot.
Yeah.
He lives in New York nowadays.
Yeah, yes.
I think he's in Finland right now.
Ah, okay.
I was supposed to go to New York and see him, but then that never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we had sauna with him last time. Maybe. 10 years ago.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And he always knew everything about all the scene, what's going on, more than anybody else, pretty much.
Yeah, and he was also DJing at Corner.
Yeah, he was that Yeah, that's how I originally also knew him. But yeah. I knew him before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sami was there.
Yeah, and you were also there on the at the door.
Yeah, yeah, I was bouncer for probably 10 years.
Yeah.
Right. I, you know, I don't know how I ended up doing that stuff, but it, but corner was a good place.
Yeah.
After a couple of first years, you know, people kind of learned that you don't want to fight with us.
Yeah. There were some.
They're always going to be a kind of original, kind of like checking us out and think what you can do, what you can't do inside.
Okay.
But Mwenden was mostly peaceful.
Yeah.
Only time mostly anything happened when some not heavy metal people came in and just start laughing, and all those long-haired ass wipes, and of course people got mad, and then you have to go and kind of make sure nobody dies.
So before Corner, there were certain. I came to Helsinki area like in 2001, and then Corner was very much alive. But before that, I have no idea what was going in the scene of the metal bar scene in Helsinki.
Honestly, I mean, know it myself. Corner was my first kind of like contact with the heavy metal bar scene, and it was just by accident. Now, if actually Sami, one of the old bouncers got fired, and Sami said he knew me as I'm bouncing, and he introduced me to the Merja was taking care of corner, and they actually because of Sami I got the gig.
Right. Okay.
And I was bouncing a little bit before that, but you know, heavy metal bar seemed like perfect thing for me.
Yeah.
I'm playing, you know, working with Tommy, which was one of my best friends. It was a lot of fun. For one time, we both have a guitar and an amplifier in an Arekka, and I was practicing, teaching his stuff. We're playing with two guitars over there.
Okay,
so it's cool.
Good times.
Yeah, it was good times. Yeah. And the beginning also was good money. Later on, not that much.
Okay, right.
The whole business is ruined, man. We just have a like, get together with a bunch of old bouncers. Nobody does that anymore. It's all changed, unfortunately, not for the better.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I think I've done my bouncing already.
Yeah,
I thought about it a couple of times in Florida and Texas, but maybe not.
Yeah,
maybe it's, you know, I don't need to be fighting with kids anymore.
Yeah, right. It's good to go forward in life.
Yeah. It's just like with that team, you know, like I work in a nightclub Fenia. We had a great team, and it was a lot of fun. And also, you know, you don't have to look from your back. You know, over somebody's covering you. I would maybe work a couple nights just for fun, but like a regular gig, like in Houston, they pay like $20 to $25 an hour. That's definitely not enough for that.
Yeah.
No, it's not worth it.
Yeah, right. Tough jobs.
Yeah, it's demanding, but it was really taught me a lot too.
Yeah.
I was
working about human nature, I guess.
Oh yes, and you have to be able to sell things out by talking. You just can't be just, you know, going and throwing people out for nothing. And if you work the same place for a long time, your face is, your personality is the one that makes it happen. Not just you go in there and just, you know, shoving people around. Right. And with your personality, you take care of the situation mostly.
Yeah.
Then you use force if you have to, but...
Yeah. I think maybe we could be wrapping it up.
Yeah.
But hey, thanks for coming and let's see.
Yeah, I was happy to actually make it happen because... I was kind of desperate already sometimes with the whole thing coming here with the COVID, and it was a big pain in the ass. I actually made it here. I'm happy. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
It's cool.
My pleasure.